Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 72 of the Peristyle Podcast. If you don't know, the Peristyle Podcast is our weekly internet radio show talking all about USC, especially football. We talk about some basketball as well. Today is July 1st, 2009, and it's our 72nd episode, as I said. We got a really good show for you today. We're going to talk with Coach Harvey Hyde. We'll have Dan Wyke in there. We're going to talk some recruiting. Later on the segment, we had the Rising Stars Camp. We had to do our podcast one day early last week because the Rising Stars Camp was on Wednesday and Thursday. It's when some of the top prospects all over the country come into camp at USC and get evaluated by the coaches. A lot of offers went out, so we'll cover all of that later on the podcast. If you have any questions or comments, you can always drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's podcast@uscfootball.com. is our email address. And we're going to talk with Coach Hyde in the first segment. He's with us from Catalina Island. Coach, what's going on over in the island?
Well, I tell you what, I just finished my workout here this morning, and it's a little overcast, but the weather's been absolutely fabulous. I'm over here for the 4th of July weekend, and, you know, the USC band comes over here. They come over on Friday night, and they march here in the July 4th parade, and then they have a concert at the casino on July 4th evening, and then on Sunday morning, they go back to campus. They have the whole barge full of their instruments and so on. It really is a lot of fun over here. I really enjoy it here. And don't worry, my dog is with me. You won't hear the dog. I shut the door, okay?
Okay. That's...
But she loves it over here. And if there's if the lines get a little wobbly or you can't hear us or smeared a little bit, there's water in the line. Let's just call it that, okay?
It's a long way to go at the Catalina there with these phone lines here. But well, Coach, I just wanted to thank our sponsor for the segment, Southern California Tickets. SCTickets.com is the website, 1-800-888-7287. Concerts, sporting events, theater. And was just watching TV this morning, and they were talking about Spamalot, and that's playing, I think it's the Omnisyn. They're playing somewhere in LA, so I was going to give them a call and get some tickets for that show, because that should be a lot of fun.
I'll tell you, if you and I are buying our tickets there, then everybody else ought to take advantage of it, too, because you're always going to, you can be in the front row or the side or the balcony. You can be anywhere you want at any type of event.
All right. Well, thanks to sctickets.com. I'm definitely going to be calling Curtis up there. Go to Spamalot. I just heard that was a lot of fun. But we have some questions, Coach, and there's one big one we're going to get to that'll probably be the topic for most of the segment. But first off, we had one from Patrick in Chicago. He wanted to know, do you think Coach Carroll plans his scheme first and then recruits players to fit that scheme, or does he recruit the best players possible and then build a scheme to fit around them?
Well, in watching Pete Carroll and watching what he's done, I think he recruits the top players that he can get anywhere in the country. And then he puts them into his scheme and finds a place for them to play in his scheme. I think that he wants great athletes, and he'll find a place for them to play. If they're a running back and he thinks his college position might be a linebacker, and a lot of players have done that, as you know, then he'll create that place for him to play in his schemes. He runs the same defense every year, maybe adjusts just a little bit here and there, runs the same offense every year. In fact, even now with Jeremy Bates and Johnny Morton as the offensive coordinator, nothing has changed. You've been to all the spring practices and scrimmages and so on. It's the same offense with a few tweaks here and there. That's why I'm really looking forward to this coming year to see just what changes there might be with the offense. Rocky Seto is now the defensive coordinator from Nick Holt, and I don't think anything will change from there because that's Pete Carroll's offense, and it's really Pete Carroll's defense too. Remember, when you're the head coach, you approve both schemes on what's going on both sides of the ball. And you're really aware of the game plans each week of what the defense is doing and how the offense is planning on attacking the defense of the opponent and so on. So you know what's going on. So, yes, you do recruit the top athletes, and then you find a place for them to play in your offense. Now, if you go into a situation where you're a new coach and you you don't have enough talent and so on, then sometimes you do recruit and you take the players that are there at that school and you try to find an offense or find a defense that best fits them so you can get going with your program and establish some type of pride and success. And then as you get going, and then you can start recruiting the next year to your type of player that you want to fit into your scheme or your offense or your defense. So sometimes it's a combination of both. I mean, if you have a quarterback that can't run, then you're not going to run a type of offense of an option or spread or a tiger, as they call it, or wildcat, depending what offense you want to call it, unless your quarterback can run and run option and so on. And you got to be a tough kid, too, but he's going to get hit a lot. So, you know, I really think that you have a philosophy. The players coming into your school or university know what your philosophy is. They know where they fit. They watch all the games. There's more. Players know more today about coaches and offenses and defenses and so on than players ever knew before because of the exposure on the internet, the exposure on television and so on. They can almost themselves look at a team and say, this is where I fit at this position. And so it's a combination of both player and coach. But really, when you're in an established program like Ohio State, they run what they run at Ohio State. But they've developed the spread for Pryor. They had to do that there because that's the type of athlete he is. It would be crazy to recruit him unless you're going to take advantage of him. So that's what they've done. Florida's always taken advantage of their formation, what they run. They have a running athlete like Tim Tebow but you know, you look at Oklahoma, they're like SC. They have Bradford. They don't run Bradford much. Now, Texas will run Colt McCoy. They'll run him more than what I would really want to, because you really don't want to get him knocked out. And he's been knocked out a couple of times. So you got to be really careful when you have a star like that. You don't want him to get hit, believe me. So I think it's a combination, but at SC, you recruit the top athletes in the nation. And then you find where they play in your program and what position.
I agree with you 100%, Coach, just to see the way Carroll goes after guys. I mean, he really looks around, and when he says a kid's out of state, I want him to be a first-round NFL draft pick. I mean, he's really going after the best athletes possible. So, you know, maybe someday he would change a scheme for particular athletes and stuff. And they have adapted some things. They went to, like, that elephant formation, changed things around a little bit when they wanted to get Cushing on the field. A couple years ago, but you know, for the most part, I think you're right. I mean, it's just, he's going to get the athletes and make them fit into the system. And they're usually good enough athletes that they could play pretty much any system. So, the next topic, Coach, this is, from one of our female listeners, Liz, and, we have did you know we have female listeners, Coach?
Well, I sure hope we do.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of them on Facebook. We got a lot of comments on there, so it's good stuff.
That's great. We love football fans. And we don't care who they are. Just send in your questions. We'll be happy to answer them. Remember, there isn't any question that you think might be embarrassing or stupid to ask. Ask anything that you want to find out, and we'll do our best to answer.
We will definitely do our best. And Liz brings up a topic we talked about briefly, I believe it was last week, and it's the proposal that went through in the Pac-10 where they wanted to eliminate the overnight stay of a home football or basketball team in a hotel. So usually, you know, a visiting team would come in, stay in a hotel, and all the players are sequestered. And the same thing happens with home, for football games. USC stays over the hotel across, I think it's Radisson or something, across Figueroa from campus. And a lot of basketball teams do the same thing as well. It gives the chance, the team a chance to just watch film and be sequestered and kind of be on a level playing field with the visiting team. And what she brought up was she didn't think it was fair if the home team was not able to prepare the same way a visiting team might, looking at film, bonding with the team. And she also brought up a point that I didn't even think about. It affects fans like me who stay at the team hotel as part of the experience of having my season tickets. She said she makes a whole weekend out of it. So, I mean, she likes to see the coaches and the players before the game, and it's a tradition with her, and I think a lot of other people do as well. So she didn't want the Pac-10 to pass this proposal, and if they did, she'd need to cancel hotel reservations and stuff like that. And I did a little research, Coach, and basically the Pac-10 Council, which is 30 members, three from each team, representing each team, met, I think it was June 3rd and June 4th, early June, up in San Francisco. And what they came up, their proposal was to eliminate the football team and basketball team hotel stays, you know, before the game, like Liz talked about. Also eliminate international trips. It's mostly with basketball teams. They do these international little tours and stuff that can be kind of expensive. And also printed media guides. And they put that before the NCAA. But from what I've read and from what I've researched a little bit, the NCAA, the earliest they would actually be able to look at that is sometime in August. And at least, you know, some of the people felt that if they implemented this, it wouldn't be something that would happen for probably 2 years. So at least for Liz's hotel reservations for this year, I don't think she has to worry about that. But just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that, Coach. I guess we can talk about each of them, but first the hotel stays. I mean, you've been a head coach. What does a team get out of that, and how important do you think is that to a team?
Well, I think it's very important, and I don't see that rule passing. I think the coaches themselves will step in and say, no, we're not going to allow it. We make the money as far as the football programs make the money, and we need to do this. It is an unfair advantage if the visiting team is able to stay together and not be distracted from fans and so on and have a floor in a hotel and so on, and the visiting and the home team can't do that. And it all started back where you wanted your players all together. It wasn't as much as the preparation, but you are prepared. But what happens, players get distracted. People know where the players live. People come by and visit them and bother them all night. And what was happening, players were starting to go home if they lived near school, or they were starting to go to other people's apartments to sleep so people wouldn't bother them. And then you had a few of the players that really didn't have the discipline not to go out. So, you know, some players would go out and be out at a later hour than what they should be, or be talked into maybe having a beer or something and so on. And it just was too many loose ends. So, you know, I always wanted our team in a hotel. I always found a hotel that was somewhat secluded or a place where people wouldn't bother them. And you always had a complete floor where you had the security and you had a security guard at the elevator. So nobody would, you know, come up the floor, up the stairs and so on. And you had a curfew hour. And I think, you know, the players liked it. I really think the players liked it because you protect them from their friends or people suggesting that, oh, just come over for a little while, or they didn't have to go home, or they didn't have to find a place to be. And in the morning you get up and you all eat together and you have your meetings the night before and you have your last meetings in the hotel before you leave for the stadium. And not only that, now you even tape. You do your early taping, pre-taping in the hotels before you leave for the stadium. They have all these rooms set up for you where you go in and get taped up. And so when you get to the stadium, you're already taped as far as your ankles and so on. And you don't have to go through that rush at the stadium in the locker rooms, which allows you to leave later for the stadium rather than having to be in the stadium 3 hours before a game or 2.5 hours before a game because you have to go there, you have to get taped. In a hotel, you have a regular schedule. You say, okay, all tackles come down at 9:30. Tackles get taped, and they go back to their room. Then at 11 o'clock or 10:30, all linebackers come down. So that you're not sitting or waiting in the locker room, everyone in a stadium waiting to get taped. So there are so many reasons why you want to stay in a hotel, to protect the players, to be able to get more done, to be able to get you to be more organized, to leave at the same time, to have your police escort there. And also, there always used to be that problem where you had to wait for a kid, or the kid's car didn't start, or he didn't wake up in the morning. And so the whole team, or you left him, or you had to suspend him because he wasn't there on time for the buses or that pregame meal. So why have all those problems? When you have them in a hotel, they're all there. They all get their wake-up call. They all have a roommate. They all get up. We used to book our rooms like two quarterbacks in the same room so they could talk about game plan. The two guards are in the same room so they could talk about blocking schemes. The two tackles were in the same room so they could talk about blocking schemes. Or you could have the strong side, weak side. Or you have the corners, or you have the safeties in the same room as far as roommates. So that, you know, if they have a question during the night, or during the time they're in the room relaxing before a game, they could discuss their assignments there at the hotel. Where back on campus, they don't even live together, a lot of them, so they can't talk about this. So it gives them extra time to prepare and relax, and no one bothers them. And a on Saturday, if you have a late game, they're there in the hotel all day, and they wait there rather than be around town. And they, well, I think I'll run over and get some shopping done, or I got to go to the cleaners, or I got to go here, or I got to go there, because kids aren't going to sit in their hotel room or their apartment all day waiting for a 7 o'clock game or when you leave for the stadium. So I think it's a must. I don't think they'll change that rule, and I don't think they'll change its tradition, because I'm going to tell you what, hotels love it, and before they'd allow that to happen, they'll give the teams better rates to stay in the hotel because they want the boosters to stay there too. But you see, teams don't spend money in a hotel. Teams don't go to the bars. Teams have a special meal prepared for them. They eat at a special time, they go back to their rooms, or they go to their meetings, and they go back to their rooms. But boosters hang out, stay up all night, have a lot of fun, party, do all their things, spend money, and then get ready to go to the game. So hotels will work around this, and hotels already lower the rates that teams are paying. It's not the normal rate a visitor would pay to get these teams to stay in hotels. Like UCLA, now I know UCLA stays at what was the Ritz-Carlton in Pasadena. And that's a pretty fancy hotel. Now it's the Langham. So they stay in Pasadena at the Ritz-Carlton. People come in and stay there. That's where Notre Dame stays, too, when they play USC, when UCLA isn't staying there. And, you know, that's a pretty nice hotel. So they give them a nice rate. They have them there, and it's close to the Coliseum.
No, I mean, it makes sense, Coach. It seems like the proposal is kind of penny-wise and pound-foolish, where it's the expense compared to, from what I read, maybe you're talking about $5,000 a game or $6,000 a game. It's a drop in the bucket compared to like the, you know, millions of dollars in the athletic budget. And you could be giving a team a significant disadvantage, competitive disadvantage. And also you could put teams in jeopardy where, say, a USC, you know, in their final game, the final home game, someone goes out, like the court, you know, whatever. One of the key players goes out and gets drunk and cuts his hand on a beer bottle, and it's a big scandal. And it wouldn't have happened if he wasn't, you know, if he was in a hotel room. And it hurts the conference. It could, you know, it could cost the conference millions in a bowl bid. So it just seems like the small amount of money that this costs, you know, compared to what you're spending on these athletic budgets and stuff, it seems like it's worth it, because just from the protection, angle alone.
That isn't going to pass, okay? That isn't going to pass. They might make it an option. You know, universities have that option now. They don't have to stay in a hotel. A coach has a certain budget, and he does everything within that budget. If schools can't afford it, then they won't. You know, a coach has to make a decision. I'd rather spend the money on this than stay in a hotel. But most universities want their teams together the night before the game. I mean, that's just something that I wouldn't let happen if I could help it, because I went through all the reasons why.
Yeah, so you're telling Liz not to worry. No problem, right?
I don't think, tell her not to worry.
Okay.
Because they'll find a way to get it done anyway. They'll get some hotel to comp it.
Okay. Well, the other part of this that's going to go, you know, we'll see what happens. And I think some schools have done this already, but the printed media guides, they did, we touched on this a little bit before too. They reduced the pages. I can't remember how many pages, like 200 something, like 210 pages now or something like that. It has to be a lot smaller. And there was people that are complaining that the bigger schools would basically print out these enormous like recruiting pamphlets that had all kinds of stuff in there, and it wasn't necessarily for the media anymore. I mean, being in the media, I mean, I enjoy looking at them. It's an easy way to look up stuff if there's stats you want to get from. There's a lot of history in the media guide, and of course, you know, the stuff on the current team, and you know, even when you're looking there for travel arrangements, when you see when the teams are going to leave for certain games and stuff like that. I mean, I like having that, and it's so big. I mean, you know, we're in an internet age for sure, and you can get it online. But when you're something that big, I'd rather have it in my hand. You know, I'd rather have something that I could look up and just kind of file away. I have a whole, you know, media guides, I think all the way back to 1995 or something, stacked up in my office. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I don't know how much coaches were involved, in the printing of these things, but you know, it's kind of a way for the schools to kind of promote their own team.
No, I agree with you. First of all, it started, as you mentioned, a few years ago. They didn't have a limit on the number of sizes or pages that you could have, and I think Ohio State or Alabama had the biggest media guide in the country. People even knew how many pages that were in it. Then they put a number on how many pages it could be. And then I remember on the stationery several years ago, they put a amount of colors and what you could do with the stationery in an athletic department. And now they're talking about eliminating the media guide. I think it would be a foolish thing to do. First of all, they do sell them. They get an income from them. People, the media really refers to this a lot, and the fans buy media guides, and they're part of recruiting. When you know, be honest with you, when you recruit, the kid wants to know about your school too, and you send him a packet that has a media guide and all the players and so on in it, and so on in it. It's really a nice thing to have in a collection item. I mean, and a lot of people probably at their homes, a lot of Trojans have every media guide for the last 20 years or 30 years or whatever, where they can go back and look up things, scores of the games, who made a big run, all these type of things. And, you know, everything's now going to the computer, and they say you can get all that information off of that and so on, which is fine. But I'm a dinosaur, okay? And a dinosaur doesn't do that. A dinosaur, I like to have my media guide right with me. Or if I need to Xerox a page, I just put it in the Xerox machine and I Xerox what I want. And I have it, and I can take it with me, and I can always prepare. I don't have to have a laptop to look up anything. And every game that the Trojans have, I have the opponent's media guide. So I can read through that and refresh my mind on the players and what's going on and who's coming back and how many starters are back and coaches' names. And I think it's very important to know this as far as when I do a show or we are together talking, then I know. And I should know a little bit about the opponent and everything to be able to tell people that. Now, every individual out there doesn't have a media guide, so they cannot refresh themselves on all of this type of information. So I would hate to see this happen. I know it saves universities somewhere around $300,000. That was the figure that I heard as far as when you put the hours that are spent in the sports information office as far as putting the material together, the people, the printing of the media guide, to this, to that, and so on. But like you and I spoke, why don't they just get someone or allow the NCAA pass a rule where they allow someone to sponsor it, like USC Media Guide presented by someone, Nike, Adidas. If you're an Adidas school, let Nike and so on throw in a few extra dollars, and if you're a Nike school or an Adidas school or whatever, and let it be their, you know, presented by them. Their emblem is on every hat and shirt and shoe that the team wears. So, you know, I can't say that's endorsing, athletes aren't endorsing a product because they wear everything. The coaches wear the shirts with the Adidas sign on, everything else. It's on a lot of the jerseys. So why not let that be part of the package and let Nike or somebody else be the presenter of the media guides for these schools, and I think it's something that's good. I hate to see everything being eliminated. I mean, yeah. From the past, you know, before long they're going to say we can only play with six players, but it doesn't cost as much, or they're going to come up and they're going to say, you know, the uniforms cost so much, so when the one player comes off the field, he's got to take his uniform on and let the other guy put it on, and then he can run in the game. That way we don't have to buy as many uniforms.
That's a good idea, Coach. Well, I'm going to talk to someone in the sports information department because, I mean, that's work they're going to be doing anyway. There's all the stats in there. They're going to be compiled anyway by sports information. They got to do programs and everything. All that stuff's reusable. I'm sure the printing costs are fairly high, but, you know, anything they sell, I mean, you can make money doing that. They sell a lot of those things. And there are little sponsorships on the back of the media guide. I'm not sure if they could do bigger ones and stuff like that. But it's interesting to me. I mean, it's not like they're hiring some outside firm. I mean, they have their own internal people put this together. It's mostly, you know, I think the biggest expense would be the printing costs. And the most ironic thing, Coach, is when they had these 30 members of the Pac-10 Council meet up in San Francisco, they met at the Fairmont Hotel on a busy weekend where rooms were at least $450 a night. I don't think they were shacking up two or three in a room. And there were some private jets that even went up there to take people up there. So it's kind of funny. There's some irony there when this is what they're talking about, trying to save a few bucks on something that seems pretty important.
No, I agree with you 100%. Why couldn't they have met on a campus somewhere and stayed in the dorm room?
Yeah. Why not, you know?
You know what I mean?
Makes sense, though. All right, Coach. Well, we appreciate the time, and thank you to we had a question from Patrick. Thank you to that, and thank you to Liz. Any other questions or comments, always you can drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. And, Coach, thanks for spending some time with us on your vacation in Catalina.
Well, thank you very much for all you people out there, and I appreciate very much, Ryan, the opportunity of talking again, and I look forward to being with you next week.
All right, and thanks to Southern California Tickets. Thank you, Coach. We'll be back after this short break talking more USC football.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, and we are joined in this segment by uscfootball.com beat writer Dan Wyke. Hello, Dan. You're in studio today. Welcome to my house.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. I appreciate it. Your hospitality just knows no boundaries.
Yes. We're taping the podcast together. It sounded better on Skype. I think we like that on Skype. We're going to get you a microphone for your computer. Sound a little bit better, but of course, the best is when you're in the luxurious studios of uscfootball.com.
It's really a palace.
We have a fish tank and everything here in the studio. Isn't that cool?
A fish tank and and just, you know, you got a Southern woman and and an ESPN writer in the house today,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we have Bruce Feldman on the sidelines kind of hanging out. Jana, my girlfriend's upstairs talking Southern things and stuff. All right, well, we want to talk some summer workouts. USC, you know, after spring football, basically, if you don't know, what happens is that the team can kind of come together and do their own throwing sessions. They're basically 7-on-7, 11-on-11, maybe just throwing lines without coaches present. That's what they're allowed to do. There's not allowed to be any coaches down there when they do these workouts. They can do conditioning with Coach Carlisle and the strength coaches. So they can do all kinds of running, jumping, plyometrics, all that kind of stuff. But they're not allowed to do anything with a football in it unless coaches are not there. USC is nice enough to allow those practices to be open. So we go down there for all of the summer workouts. We get to see the team working out, basically trying to, you know, keep the rust off, keep sharp, throwing the football around. You get to see all the quarterbacks in action. You can see the linemen go at each other, even though they're not in pads. There's a lot of opportunities to kind of see what this team is doing in between the big practice sessions of spring football and fall camp.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is most interesting is that without the coaches there, is you get to see what players step up as coaches. You get to see what guys are working with other guys. You know, one of the things I noticed yesterday was with the defensive line, Everson Griffin was barking orders and was telling people, you know what, we're always working. We're not sitting down. You know, if we've got time to rest, we've got time to do stuff. We've got time to work. It's really remarkable. I mean, here's a guy who last year was so firmly in the doghouse, and because of his work ethic and because of, you know, maybe his leadership abilities or lack thereof, now when, you know, you remove so many guys from the defensive line, he really has kind of stepped into that void. And I think is with his the way he's working and trying to lead by example. I mean, you see him pick up yesterday James Boyd and work with James Boyd on James Boyd's hands and stuff like that. And, I mean, you know, if you would have told me a year ago you would see Everson Griffin doing that stuff, I would have called you a liar. I mean, I just didn't know he had that in him.
Yeah, we started to see that in spring football. He did a little bit more of that. He told us as much that he wanted to emerge as a leader, and even some of his teammates were a little skeptical about that. They wanted to see him lead by example and not just say, well, I'm the oldest guy here now, I'm going to be the leader. But he has. I think he stepped up and done that. We saw him work with Boyd, like you said. Devon Kennard, I think, was another guy that he kind of took to the side a little bit. You got to see that and, them kind of working out together. And it was an interesting opportunity to see the veterans go in the first string and then let some of the rookies, you know, the incoming freshmen come in and get instruction and get yelled at if they don't have the cleats on. I mean, there's all kinds of weird stuff going on.
Yeah, no, you know, I think Simi Vahakite, I probably said that wrong.
Simeone Vahakite.
Vahakite.
That's what Gerard said, so hopefully that's correct.
Well, Gerard's never been wrong.
He's good at that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, you know, he comes in and he drops a ball And the first pass thrown to him, I guess, in his USC career, and he drops it. And, you know, the defense just goes nuts because he doesn't have cleats on. He's just wearing, you know, his, like, running shoes or something like that. And, you know, there's that. You know, it's funny, like, they
I think Jarvis Jones, too, he didn't have cleats on. They were trying to get him to come into a play and play linebacker. And he was, I'm changing my shoes. And we talked to Devon Flournoy, who he went took a shower before he was supposed to. And he was, like, you know, they're just figuring out what's going on. You know, like, he went took a shower after the workout, but they were still going to the weight room. And he was like, oh, man. So they're screwing up a little bit, but they're learning their way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can remember back to 1972, but, you know, freshman year is tough. I mean, when you make that transition, you know, from high school to college, you know, it's something like where, I mean, you had to deal with, like, the Kent State riots. I mean, you know, these kids are dealing with stuff like, you know, you're not just a new kid on campus. You're a new kid on campus who, you know, if you're Kevin Graff, you're trying to block, you know, Everson Griffin or Armand Armstead, you know, on your first few days. You know what I mean? And like, that's enough of a shock to the system. Another kind of funny story was Torrin Harris was out at cornerback and Joe McKnight, you know, moved over to wide receiver. Joe McKnight has played everywhere, by the way. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. He has played everywhere. But so he'll go out to wide receiver, and everybody just starts yelling mismatch, just screaming mismatch. And Joe McKnight throws his own little route, and I mean leaves Torrin Harris like in literally like three, four steps behind him. I mean, and he doesn't even get the ball. And people are like, Joe, what route's that? He's like, I'm just working, man, just working.
It was, yeah, Joe played a little cornerback, too. But it was funny to see them. They really were trying
to take
it.
He's a good cornerback.
Yeah, he deflected a pass, and he intercepted another one.
I wasn't going to save this for the war room, but can I do this here?
Yeah, go ahead. With this war room stuff, it comes out on Friday, but Dan will share a little info with you here.
Okay, maybe this will still be in the war room, too. But Kevin Thomas, I had a chance to talk to about Joe McKnight playing corner. So I figured I'd go to, you know, the USC's most experienced cornerback, ask him about it. He said that Joe McKnight would be an NFL cornerback after 1 year of playing corner in college.
Wow.
He's like, he could play today.
He looked, I mean, you know, if you want to watch his hips and all that stuff, I mean, he seemed like he was in the right position. He didn't look like he was stumbling over himself. I mean, he got to the ball quickly. He closed. He looked like what you would expect out of a cornerback, and he's obviously a running back.
Let me ask you this. I mean, because you were here during his recruitment and stuff like that, and do you think he would have been better served to play cornerback?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, he's got a lot of accolades just playing tailback because of his explosiveness. He got to play as a true freshman, which I don't think he would have been able to do, you know, if he wasn't a running back. I mean, you got more opportunities early as a running back. I think if he wanted to kind of play a little both ways, it might have been better to start off at tailback because he was going to see the field or maybe special teams as well. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting point. They're still,
because he's on the field. He would probably actually be on the field more as a cornerback.
I don't think he would have been as a true freshman.
No, but now I'm saying, like, you know, he's not splitting time with, you know, six other dudes. He's, you know, he'd probably be a starting cornerback.
But he's not going to get 20, 25 carries a game, but he still will have two, three, or, you know, who knows this year, it might even be more of, like, 100-yard games.
He'll get 10
or 75
yards
receiving, you know, stuff like that. He'll get his touches, and he'll get a few games where he's going to have breakout stuff where, you know, maybe he would or wouldn't as a corner, but it'd be, I want to see somebody kind of go both ways and do that. I mean, it just seems like it's kind of a fun thing to do, you know, to get a guy on offense, get a guy on defense, but Carroll doesn't seem to be into that. Like Steve Smith, that we were talking about with him before he went to the Giants. I mean, he played a lot of corner going, you know, and they were thin at corner and Carroll didn't move him over. So it doesn't seem like he's going to do it, you know, anytime soon.
Oh no, this is just Joe, you know, doing his own thing, but can we talk about Joe McKnight for a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a bone to pick with the national media.
Okay.
Bunch of liberal hippies. All those liberal hippies at Sporting News.
Okay.
Now, that in their college football preview, they list the biggest underachiever in the Pac-10 as Joe McKnight. And that rubs me the wrong way a little bit, I think. Not because I'm a huge homer or anything like that, but I don't think he's an underachiever. He's been good. Look at his numbers. I mean, how can you be an underachiever when you average 7 yards a carry? It's kind of like, I know I've used this multiple times on the show, but it's like how they say that the only guy who could keep Michael Jordan under 20 points was Dean Smith. I think in some ways, Pete Carroll is kind of, because of the way he's shuffled running backs in and out, has kept Joe McKnight from really breaking out and having that huge, you know, 1,500-yard season.
I agree with you, and it's not like he's had like these
and he's had injuries.
Games.
And mean,
he's had
injuries.
Some injuries and stuff. That would be the only knock against him, I guess you would say, if, as far as underachieving goes. But I think if he was getting the kind of carries that a feature back would get in most other offenses, you wouldn't have said he was an underachiever.
Is he the biggest underachiever on the team, even?
I mean, I don't know. You want to talk about underachievers? I mean, a lot of the times.
Well, I don't. I just want to point that out, that I don't. I want to talk about achievers.
You want to just talk about guys that you. Yeah, but I think a lot of it's just a subject of the system that he's in. I don't think there's much that he can do about it. I think, you know, that he's had a couple games where he has made some mistakes, or if he put the ball on the turf and stuff like that. They put him in weird spots, too, with the wildcat thing where it just didn't look
good. Oh, my gosh. Sark. Yeah.
So, I wouldn't blame that kind of stuff on him. I certainly wouldn't agree that he's, you know, a huge underachiever in the Pac-10. I mean, 7 yards a carry, I think it speaks for itself. When you're saying that, when he touches a ball, usually exciting things happen.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. It's like, you know, I mean, he's really a whirlwind out there. I mean, he can do some great things, and you never know. But I think for him, a big thing has been his sort of new attitude. I think he's got he's more team-centric right now. He feels, I think, more at home with the guys. He's just – I feel like he's a different Joe almost, you know, not your ordinary Joe. Ugh. That's
wow,
terrible.
That's a cricket. I don't have I'm going to play crickets.
Or that Price is Right. No, but good harmonies, by the way.
I don't know what that sounds like, since when I was on there, I won everything. So
yeah. Yeah.
All right, here's a question for you, Dan. I got this. I was on the radio the other day, in ESPN Radio in Austin, Texas, and they asked me straight up, is Damian Williams the best receiver on the team? I answered yes.
Yeah.
Rojo is probably one of the hardest workers on the team, and he's definitely doing what he can. But I think this is a really good 1-2 punch. I don't think they've had something like. I mean, a lot of times you have like a group of guys that all seem to be pretty good. I think it's going to help the offense that I think there's a clear number one and number two receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I think. This is hard for me to say this because I know people are going to roll their eyes and people are going to be like, "Yeah, we've heard this all before." But I look at David Osbury, and when I talk to cornerbacks on USC about receivers, obviously they say great things about Damian, they say great things about Rojo, but when they talk about Osbury, like, they get a little hint of fear, almost, or like admiration sort of for a guy that big, that strong, and that fast with good hands. I mean, it's a pretty unique combination. A lot of people might only see him in pads. You know, we see Osbury in T-shirts and shorts, and it looks like he has pads on.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, like he... Like
Taylor Mays light or something.
Yeah, no. I mean, he might be bigger than Taylor Mays.
He's taller than Taylor Mays. I don't...
Like wider, too. I mean, he is gigantic.
Yeah, I don't know. But Taylor's in a kind of class by himself.
Yeah, no. I mean, I remember the first day I actually covered any USC events. Ryan, you picked me up. You brought me out to... I believe it was like a 6 a.m. workout. Thanks again for that, by the way. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
And this was Osbury did not have his braids in or his dreads. He just had a gigantic afro, and he was like the second dude I saw. And I was like, oh, my God. Like who are these people? Well, and like why are they so gigantic?
You're like, wait, that's an eighth string wide receiver? Holy crap. What kind of team is this?
Like, who is that guy, and why has he never caught a pass? No, but he's a guy who I think is – could maybe be the most productive receiver they have based on his skill set. Obviously, Damian Williams is just so polished, and he's so mature. You know, he's smart, just knows football. He's a leader. Obviously, I think he is the kind of cream of the crop when it comes to the receivers. But I would almost think that Osbury has a chance. I hope Rojo's not listening to this because Rojo's my guy. But
right.
But, you know, I really think Osbury has a chance to be, you know, a top receiver on this team. Maybe even the best.
No, I think you're right about that. He's kind of like a guy that, and he uses his size well. Like Patrick Turner, people say he was kind of a little soft for as big as he was. And I think he's still going to do well in the NFL. But I think Osbury does use his size well. It's kind of like a guy with a, you know, overpowering serve in tennis or a 95-mile-hour fastball that, you know, maybe you're not as afraid of Greg Maddux, but Maddux is a better pitcher. But there's something about Osbury that other people don't have. No one has that kind of combination that he has. And even though he might not be as good a receiver, he could definitely develop into one, but he does put that, like, I think you put it right. I mean, he can put some fear into defensive backs just because of what he brings at the top of his game.
Well, you can't jam him. I mean, you can, no. You can maybe, if you read the snap count right and you have excellent instincts, you can maybe jam Rojo. You can maybe jam Damian. I don't know how you'd ever jam Osberry unless you're, you know, a defensive end out there. I mean, there's really no reason, no way to do it. He's just so big. And I mean, we talk about you compare him to Patrick Turner. Turner was slender, though. I mean, Turner wasn't like a thick guy. I never looked at Patrick Turner and was like, oh my gosh, he's gigantic.
He was like cut up and stuff and tall.
I mean, he's tall, but he had like those kind of long muscles. He wasn't like, you know, he wasn't jacked. Like, Osberry is jacked. Osberry is huge. He's, ugh. I can't even.
Well, it's funny. You know, you talk about putting fear into defenders. You know, he might not be the best receiver, but maybe he does cause the most fear. Kind of like a Curtis McNeil isn't the best running back, but he might be the one that the defenders are the least happy about having to tackle. You know, just they can do it, but it's just harder than the other guys.
Yeah, I remember when Taylor in the spring said that he hates trying to tackle Curtis McNeil because, you know, if there's a player that's going to make him look silly, it's like the 5'6" guy who's going to sneak around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, you know,
squat, powerful legs.
Or like, you know, I mean, remember, I think it was during the fall when he put a helmet into Ray Maluga's chest and knocked Maluga back.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, that's a dude that is
that's
like
impressive.
Literally 1/10 the size of Ray Maluga who did that. But
he's like mini me or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. But I mean, I don't know. I think that to get back to your question, is Damian Williams the best receiver on the team? Yeah, I do. I think he is. But just because he's the most polished, what else do they ask you? Anything else that I can
I mean, seriously, that we talked about the Price is Right a lot. I mean, Jeff Ketchum is the publisher for the Texas rival site. And
Orange Bloods, I believe.
Yeah, Orange Bloods. I'm really good friends with him. So he co-hosts that radio show. So once he heard about the Price is Right, most of the interview was me talking, like he was asking me questions about
you and your new best friend Drew Carey and
Carey, yeah, and the co-host Chad Hastings, like his wife friend requested me on Facebook because she wanted to see the video. It was pretty funny, like they all got into it.
How has local celebrity been treating you?
It's good. I mean, just my friends and stuff, just people that haven't heard about it. It's really funny to hear. You know, when they come up to me like, oh my God, there's so many people.
It's a shame you're in a committed relationship.
You know, no. I love Jana dearly. That's good. We had a blast, though. It was good. But let's get back to workouts.
Okay. Okay.
So last Thursday, before the Rising Stars camp, USC held one of their team runs. Carlisle runs all the guys at 6:30 in the morning. They run them ragged, 45 minutes or so, and then they'll throw afterwards. And you guys were down there. It was interesting. The freshmen were down there. Most of the freshmen were there on campus. But they didn't really let them throw. They weren't really part of the throwing session. But we saw on Tuesday, they actually did. They came out in the morning, and the freshmen kind of took part in those workouts. Did you talk to any of the guys about that, like, you know, integrating the freshmen and how they're coming along?
Yeah, I mean, everybody seemed to think that you know, they're doing well. It's like I said before, the fun part is watching those guys kind of coach, the older guys kind of coach the younger guys. I mean, you get to see, you know, Josh Pinkert stand with Juwanza Starling, T.J. McDonald, you know, and just pretty much everybody in the secondary stands in the back, and then they'll look from where Pinkert, you know, kind of through his eyes, and Pinkert will be pointing and saying, this is what I'm seeing, you know, there's this. Like I said, Everson Griffin working with James Boyd, Devon Kennard. You know, Lonely Fangupa is a little different because he's more of a man already.
He looks like he should be in the NFL right now. I mean, he looks like he's 30 years old.
He's a big dude. He does not look young. But then, you know, watching like Chris O'Dowd work with John Martinez and stuff like that, and Devon Flournoy like hanging out with Damian and Rojo and those guys, and kind of, it's just good to see kind of that those other guys. I mean, these are the guys that are going to be fighting with them for their play time. You know, really. I mean, you know, Pete Carroll's not afraid to play a true freshman. You know, like, he won't. They don't care how many starters they have returning. I mean, ask Aaron Korp. If, you know what I mean? If Pete Carroll's really afraid, I bet you he thinks that Matt Barkley could play. Matt Barkley could take his job in a minute. So, you know, I think it's just good to see that they put the team first and that they work with these guys and that they try to integrate them as quickly as possible, because I think they know that ultimately if they get those guys playing at a higher level, they're going to have to raise their games up to keep going and to keep their spot. So I think ultimately it's best for them to have those freshmen playing well.
Yeah, and if some of the guys that passed the eyeball test, I think, we have pictures up on usafootball.com. The first picture's up anywhere on the internet about all the freshmen here gathering for these workouts, so you can check those out on the website if you want to see what these guys look like. But to me, Jarvis Jones...
Gigantic.
He looked like he
gigantic.
He fit in. It wasn't like, you know, and Telford, too, I think he looked, I mean, he's not as tall, but he seemed like, I mean, he's kind of a quiet kid, but, you know, real heady, and, you know, everyone knows he's a smart guy, but he looks like he could play linebacker.
He'll be all of our bosses. Yeah.
Frankie Telford. Who else do you think? I mean, Fangupo's huge. Who else did you think?
I think TJ McDonald looks physically, and Juwanza Starling, too, I thought was a big guy. Marcus Simmons looked good.
He did. Yeah, he's cut up and stuff. He had his shirt off, and we have a picture of that with his shirt off. You can see that, and he's definitely worked out before.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like you.
No. He's more familiar with the weight room than I am, and more familiar with the weight room, less familiar with Big Wok or any other buffet. I'd say those are probably the guys that stood out most for me. I mean, some guys like Flournoy, I didn't know he was that small. Like Devon Flournoy is small.
He's not real big. No.
I mean, he's like, what do you say? It was like 170 or something like that.
Yeah. He seemed like a super sharp kid, though. And yeah. And he can move. And
Simeone
Vaquite. Vaquite.
Vaquite. I mean, he looked good, like good size on him. I don't know. I mean, you know, and I thought the linemen looked good. You know, I thought Martinez was, you know, sometimes linemen look a little soft. I didn't think Martinez looked soft.
No.
I thought he looked kind of like a pretty firm guy.
And he looks like a center. He definitely looks like a center. Yeah, he does. I think he was working with Chris O'Dowd there, you know, taking snaps and stuff. I mean, like Kevin Graff is just a big
gigantic
kid. Yeah, he's a big kid anyway. But
Travis Jones, I think, looks like the most physically ready to play. He looks old, too.
He has
Greg Oden disorder. You know, like Tyron maybe Tyron Smith is more a USC-centric guy, where a guy who comes in at 18 years old and looks like he could be my uncle.
He came at 17. He was like, he turned 18 17? During the season. Like, it was crazy.
He had LeBron face. Really bad. The really bad case of LeBron face. But no, yeah. I don't know. I think that it looks like a good group. I mean, the chances that Pete Carroll is going to hit on everybody the way he felt like he hit on everybody last year are probably not as good. There might be a miss in there somewhere along the line. But I think, you know, right off the bat, I mean, when you look at those guys and you think about maybe, you know, Patrick Hall's maybe on his way too.
Five-star guy, you know, it's not like he's less likely to be a miss than some of the guys.
I mean, you add him to the mix and, you know, you look at a guy like James Boyd, who just looks like crazy athletic. I mean,
yeah,
you know, you watch him with his hands and do defensive line stuff, but then you watch him throw the ball around and you're like, oh, wow, do that too.
He out-dueled Matt Barkley when they played each other at quarterback. Like, he rushed him. I mean, he was rushing him, but he also out-threw him.
Did Barkley line up at defensive end?
No, Barkley didn't for whatever reason. I think he normally did. But for that game,
all of those guys, I mean, it's a good class, and I think, you know, USC fans should be pretty happy with it.
All right. Well, we'll be all over that. Again, check out uscfootball.com. We'll have videos of the freshmen in action going up on the site. We also have photos up there, so you can check all that out. Dan, thanks for coming into the studios and joining us.
Thanks for opening your house to me, Ryan. I'm going to go raid your fridge and hopefully get some good stuff in there.
Excellent. All right, everyone else, quick break. We're going to come back and talk the USC Rising Stars camp with Gerard Martinez.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to talk some recruiting in this segment, our final segment of the podcast. We have Gerard Martinez, uscfootball.com recruiting analyst. How are you doing today, Gerard?
I'm excited. I'm so excited because last camp, Rising Stars, is behind us. July is here. Coaches are on vacation. Recruiting starts to ease off a little bit. We got some nice passing league tournaments coming up, but The big evaluation periods for USC have basically they've passed. So, you know, now it's time to kind of focus in on what the targets are and maybe what the class is going to look like here as it develops during the fall and over the winter.
All right. Well, yeah, it's kind of a slow. May's real busy. June's kind of busy. July kind of slows down, but it starts to pick up for the team stuff. So we'll take over the reins a little bit for that for the site, if that's okay, Gerard. We'll do some more team stuff and take a backseat for recruiting for a little bit.
Sounds awesome.
You need a break. You deserve a vacation because you're all over everything. We had a couple questions. No international questions today. Hopefully that's all right. But I know. Good.
And those are always cool. They're unique. You know, I mean, you just, you know, how people are able to follow the team, you know, an ocean away. It's always kind of, you know, what kind of questions are asked. And sometimes they're really good questions. You know, people are really on top of their stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they love to follow the recruiting and stuff. And, you love talking about it. I love talking about it with you. The first one's from Mike. He wanted to know, there's a JC lineman, and he's talking about lineman being a big need for USC 2010. There's a JC lineman from College of Sequoias in California. I think it's pronounced Rozell Gaydon. He's a 6'7", 310-pound sophomore at the College of Sequoias, a highly ranked JC guy. Is this someone that you think that USC is looking at?
Yeah, possibly. I don't know a lot about Gaydon. I think he's actually originally from Minnesota. He's definitely an out-of-state guy, and College of Sequoias always gets those kind of players. I mean, they've actually got Sheldon Richardson is transferred there, and he was a five-star defensive tackle from Missouri and was actually listed as the top tight end in the nation and was in the original Rivals rankings, Rivals 100 last year, and about 6'2", 6'3", 300 pounds, was an Army All-American. Great player, and he ended up going to College of Sequoias, which was a surprise because you'd think he would go to a junior college that's closer to him, maybe somewhere like Blinn, Texas or something like that. But he ended up at College of Sequoias. So, you know, USC is always looking at College of Sequoias. I mean, every college basically on the West Coast has to look there. They've always got top talent, but it's always going to be that issue with USC specifically, whether they can really recruit those junior college guys. It's tough for them. It's tough for them to be able to get those guys in. They've got Bryce Schwab, who's committed, who's a 6'8", you know, 320-pound offensive tackle from Palomar, which is down in San Diego. And so, you know, he's originally from Pennsylvania, but that's a guy that, you know, his grades are better, and he's trying to get out midterm. He's trying to get out in December. I don't know about Gaydon. I don't know if he's going to be able to get out midterm. And sometimes that's really what's important for USC. They want to be able to get those junior college linemen out and be able to participate in spring ball. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I don't know enough about Gaydon in terms of his grades and where he is academically because, you know, talent is one thing, but when it comes to the JC linemen, that's really the important thing in terms of their academics. So with him specifically, I don't know. But, yeah, USC is definitely evaluating College of Sequoias, definitely.
All right. This one's from Kevin, more about the Rising Stars camp. He wanted to talk about some 2011 guys. Besides guys like George Farmer and Jalen Grimble, do you see USC offering more 2011 guys like DeAnthony Thomas or Anthony Wallace? And he mentioned Greg Townsend Jr., who actually did get a scholarship offer at the Rising Stars camp after, I think it was Thursday afterwards, he went up to the coach's office and got an offer.
Yeah, Townsend did get an offer, and Townsend is definitely going to be one of the top players up nationally next year. He is tremendous. He has the bloodlines, obviously, but there's a kid that we saw earlier in the year, and honestly, I mean, he was touted as a linebacker, and he looked a little pudgier, like he had a little baby fat. He looked like a younger kid, and this was, you know, just basically 6 months before the Rising Stars camp, and then he came out last week and just was tremendous. I mean, he's a good 6'3 and a half, 230, 240 pounds, and reminds us a lot of Devon Kennard in terms of his build, really great lower body, explosive, has tremendous moves, and is technically very sound. I mean, he's a guy that has a lot of moves for a young player. He doesn't rely on one specific move. He's not just a speed rusher, not just a guy that's going to try to spin you, or he's not a guy that's just going to try to bull rush you. He can really do it all. So that's a guy who's a tremendous talent, and USC is actually the first, you know, school to offer him a verbal scholarship. These kids don't really get written scholarships until September 1st. That's when, you know, that they're able to receive written materials from these colleges September 1st of their junior year. Chris Westerman's another guy who got a scholarship offer. He was tremendous. That's a kid that's probably going to be maybe a future five-star out of Chandler, Arizona, plays for Hamilton High School, 6'5", 285 pounds. But there's, other players that showed up that didn't get scholarship offers. I think from the Rising Stars camp are definitely guys that are going to be in line for scholarship offers down the road. Victor Blackwell played extremely well. He's a 6'1", 190-pound Z receiver from Mater Dei who played, all last year with Barkley and was kind of like the guy as a sophomore, was really the only playmaker that Mater Dei had on that team. And he came out and he looked really good at the Dana Hills passing tournament and turned around and showed, some good explosiveness. And he's a guy that a lot of people looked at as a possession receiver, in high school. But he's got, speed-wise, he's come along. And I think he's a guy that USC's definitely going to look at along with George Farmer. And it's, a good year, as we talked about, 2011 for receivers. But Blackwell seems like he is going to be one of those guys at the top of the board. Antoine Woods is another guy that came for the first day of the Rising Stars camp. He also showed up to the lineman camp and was definitely the best lineman, at least defensively, at the lineman camp, and was one of the best defensive linemen at the Rising Stars camp. He didn't get an offer. He was going to have a meeting with Pete Carroll and the coaching staff over the weekend. That didn't happen. He's actually gone over to Penn State for an unofficial visit. I don't know if he was actually going to camp there, but he did take an unofficial visit there this past week. And so that's going to be a school maybe to watch out for him. But that's a guy I think that down the line, maybe look at his academics, maybe look at some other variables. But probably a guy that's going to be in line for a scholarship offer. But there was a few kids there. We did a 10 of Troy Rising Juniors, and I think all those kids, Kessler, I think Cody Kessler out of Bakersfield Centennial High School, 6'1", 185. Height-wise, I don't know if he's going to be like a USC guy, especially if USC goes after a quarterback this season. What they do next season is going to be interesting. But that's a guy that, we have to watch and see if he's going to actually be a scholarship guy. But all the rest of the players that actually met the 10 of Troy Rising Juniors are probably guys that, USC is going to look at and are guys that have potential offers down the line.
Yeah, Blackwell is someone that really kind of stood out to me. You watch him. He just made a lot of plays at receiver there. And Westerman as well. I mean, he mixed up. But there's so many good defensive linemen, and it just seems like they were dominating the offensive line. But Westerman would stick his nose in there and make some noise for the offense. There wasn't a lot of noise for the offensive linemen at that camp.
I think the one thing coming away from the camp is the feeling like it's too bad Chris Westerman is not a senior to be. I think USC wishes they could kind of get him done and committed and ready to sign for next February, because he was definitely, just body-wise, I think you have to compare him to a Chris O'Dowd. I mean, he's a guy that has the NFL frame. He's got the great feet. He's got, above average athleticism, and it just has all these intangibles as offensive lineman that you really want. And, USC is going to have a great shot at him. I think that they're definitely going to be in the driver's seat for him, but he's 2 years away, and as all these kids are. We're talking about Devon Blackman is a kid that just chatted with the other night, and he's a guy that's just finished the camp circuit and did some great things at USC's camp, did some great things at UCLA, won the MVP at Oregon's camp, and that's a kid that, as a receiver, he's about 6 foot, 175 pounds, dynamic player, doesn't really have a scholarship offer from USC yet. It's kind of a, hinted, if it came down between UCLA and USC, what would you do? There's been some conversation there back and forth, but I think down the line he's definitely going to be a guy that will be a scholarship offer guy. So, again, I think with the receiver position, it's mainly just looking at the depth and making, the right offers, because, outside George Farmer, there's a lot of other good guys out there. I mean, we even saw at the skills camp one of the top players to be at a Chaparral High School, a kid who's, a good 6'4 and 180 pounds, Antoine Arnold, who a lot of people think might be, at the end of the day, the best receiver in that 2011 class. I don't know if he's really going to be able to compete with Farmer in that manner, because Farmer is, just watching him, he looks like he's gotten even a little bigger. He didn't participate in the Rising Stars camp this past week, but he did show up for his unofficial visit, and he picked up his scholarship offer. But, I mean, he looks a good 6'2", almost 6'3 now, and he's strong and he's thick, and we know he's played some great ball there at Sarah High School over the past couple years. So the receiver position is stacked, and that kind of makes this whole thing, as far as, early offers, you have to be careful and not just offer everybody early, because you might find a guy, down the line who ends up being the best of them all.
All right. Last thing we wanted to get on, maybe just a couple of names that were kind of standouts. I mean, like Jesse Scroggins, the quarterback, I think he impressed people. He ended up getting a scholarship offer. And, we talked about the defensive line a little bit. Man, there just seemed like a lot of guys over there that that really it's made names for themselves.
Oh, the defensive line was tremendous. I think defensively the camp was one of the best camps ever held at USC. When you have a defensive line, the defensive line, when the first rotation that we saw first day was, I think you had Ronald Powell at strong side. You had Jeff Shirley. What was it? Was it Josh Shirley?
Josh Shirley.
Weak side. And you had George Uko and Ricky Himalui. That was your starting defensive front line. And
yeah, it looked like it could start in the Pac-10 somewhere.
And then the second group was like Jackson Jeffcoat at strong side or weak side defensive end, and then they brought in Jalen Grimble. So I mean, it was like, oh well, they actually have an all Pac-10 rotation here on the defensive line. And then just to mix things up, this coaching staff decided to pull Ronald Powell, Justin Macklin, and Josh Shirley and put them back to linebacker, which it was like the old lobby team there as far as just looking on them on the hoof. And and then on the defensive line you still had guys like Uko didn't show up the second day, but you had the potential Uko and Ricky Humalui, Jeff Coat, and Jalen Grimble there. So it was a tremendous defensive class in general for this camp. And I think that's where the guys stand out. Ronald Powell was as good as we thought he was going to be. Maybe, the theme for us, I guess, coming away from it was that, kind of was what we expected. Not to pat ourselves on the back or anything, but you kind of knew the guys that were going to come in, expected them to really perform well, and they kind of did. Ronald Powell was as great as we thought he was. We didn't think he was going to go and really play much linebacker, and maybe thought he'd play some strong side, but he ended up playing middle linebacker and was tremendous playing middle linebacker. And it's a position that he has played before, but never against that level of competition. And he looks like a guy that they could legitimately recruit at linebacker. Somebody said, hey, offer number 55 on the peristyle. Offer that number 55 to Ronald Powell. That's maybe not a bad idea.
No.
He looks like that level guy,
yeah,
that you would want to have, playing for number 55. And some of those guys, Jeff Coe played really well. The defensive guys that we thought, Uko was definitely a guy who was in line for an offer, got an offer. I think, maybe some of the surprises, or at least some of the things that we weren't necessarily expecting, didn't necessarily know if Macklin was really going to make it in. There's always that thought, the rumors that, there was going to be maybe a guy that from out of state that would make that cameo appearance to USC. Macklin shows up. Unfortunately, I think, watching him play linebacker, which is where he's ranked, he's a little too stiff to play linebacker. I think that's one thing that kind of surprised me. I thought he'd be a little more agile and have a little more awareness in space. I think he's definitely got to play defensive end college. He's a good-looking player, and I think with his hand down, he'll develop. But in terms of, just his flexibility, I don't think he's going to be able to play linebacker in college. So that was something we saw. We saw that DeMarco Cobbs, 6'1", 200-pound receiver out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. We knew he was coming in. I think that was maybe one guy we expected a little more from. He's very athletic. He met our expectations in that manner. But whether his athleticism translates to playing receiver is still a little bit of an unknown. You can have a guy that can run fast and is big and he can jump, but whether it's, you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole is another question. And I think with DeMarco Cobbs, he's a guy that plays as a dual threat quarterback in Tulsa and isn't really a receiver. So he's raw, and you have to take that in consideration. But there's also there's some other questions there just watching him. He's really athletic, but is he really athletic as a receiver? I don't know. That maybe is a question. And so there were some questions and some things that came up that, maybe were not to the expectations. I think for the most part, coming away from the camp, we saw what we thought we were going to see, and it was just as good as we thought it was going to be. And it's still, I think prestigious-wise, just the best camp in the nation. I mean, USC just does a tremendous job bringing guys in from all areas, and the competition level and the intensity was as good as it's always been, and it just seems to grow every year.
Yeah, I mean, you got a guy like Justin Macklin out of Tennessee that, I mean, you saw him with this tight little shirt on, and he was jacked, and he could be the star of some of these other camps, and he was just like somebody else at the USC camp.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely looks a part. I mean, you got him committed to LSU, and USC is still able to bring him in and whatnot, but I think, USC got to see what they needed to see from him, and I don't know if I see – that necessarily developing down the line at all in terms of him being a target for USC. And when you have a guy like Josh Shirley, Joshua Shirley, he's not going to get the pub of a Justin Macklin. and he's a local guy that a lot of people can overlook, but he kind of is a Justin Macklin of the West Coast. He's a guy that's a defensive end, really made all of his marks as a defensive end, and probably in college people want to move him back as a strong side linebacker. He does well when he's playing up on the line, he's engaging the tight end or he's engaging the receiver on the line and he mans up against him. But when you put him back in space, there's still some questions here whether he's really going to be able to adapt. And a lot of people feel like his best position is to be an outside linebacker, but in a 3-4 and not in a 4-3. So that's something that we're going to have to watch and see how that develops. But, you know, does USC need to go to Memphis for a guy like Justin Macklin when they can recruit like a guy like Josh Shirley, who's local? And they have to do some work on Josh Shirley because he definitely likes UCLA. Ironically, talking about Justin Macklin from Tennessee, Josh Shirley likes Tennessee. So we'll kind of see how that shakes out down the line. But USC made a really good impression with him. We just put a story up today on Josh talking about USC and the Rising Stars camp and how USC may have pulled in to contention a little more with UCLA and Tennessee now as he tries to make a decision and goes through the recruiting process. He's going to take some visits. It'll be a while before he actually commits.
That's a good topic for the future. We got to talk about all the athletes that I don't think you saw USC and Tennessee on many of the same athletes in the past, and now you're seeing it a lot popping up, USC and Tennessee, with Kiffin being there. So we should probably, if anyone has any questions, you can email us podcast@uscfootball.com. But that's probably a good topic for later on, Gerard.
Yeah, Tennessee is on a lot of guys everywhere.
Yeah. They're on a lot of lists.
Yeah, Coach Orgeron's kind of taken the Ole Miss shotgun offer strategy, and you know, they had something like 85 offers out before March or something like that. So, I mean, it's definitely guys out in California, but I think you probably could say the same about Florida and Georgia and South Carolina as well. They've definitely gone out. And when you're recruiting Tennessee, or I should say you're recruiting from Tennessee, it's not necessarily a hotbed. And, you know, the thing that's really funny is that they sent all these offers, you know, out of state, and then they lost out Justin Macklin, who ends up at LSU. So, I mean, they got to work on that one. They got to make sure the first and foremost thing you got to do is put up some gates around your home state and your local area when it comes to recruiting. You can't let other SEC teams come in and pluck away your top players, and then you're really strapped. You have to go out of state. And already, you know, if you're recruiting at Tennessee, you're going to have to recruit Georgia hard. You're going to have to recruit Florida hard because that's where the majority of the players are. Tennessee is still not a huge state when it comes to, you know, the quantity of top players that you're going to be putting out there.
All right. Well, we'll definitely bring that up again down the line in a future podcast. But thanks, Gerard, for spending some time with us and sharing your insights.
No problem.
All right, everyone else, thank you for tuning in. Thanks to all of our guests. We'll be back next week talking more USC football.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.